Show. As a child, I remember watching Hawaii Five-O on television. Do you remember the fast-paced driving theme music, accompanied by an opening sequence of dizzying aerial shots of oceanside skyscrapers and beach partying? That was what I thought Hawaii was like, Benidorm in the Pacific. I was so wrong. If you board a tiny 9-seater Cessna aircraft for a 20-minute flight from Honolulu, you'll reach Hawaii's fifth largest island. Molokai has escaped commercialism.
Molokai self-selects. Of the 8 million people who come year after year to Hawaii, less than 1% come to Molokai. And it isn't easy necessarily to get to. We don't have the big fancy hotels with the big great slides and those fancy drinks with the umbrellas in them.
This 38-mile long island offers a huge variety of landscapes. At its west end, golden sands merge into rust-red soil and a scrubby desert panorama. At the eastern end are lush green valleys, thick foliage and waterfalls. In the middle, Molokai's volcanic mountains rise to almost 5,000 feet, and yet the island's home to just 8,000 people. You must see the green foliage-dotted reddish sea cliffs. They're the world's highest, soaring to 3,900 feet from the deep blue Pacific waters. There's no public transport at all, so you'll need to hire a car at the airport. And driving on the American side of the road isn't too stressful here, because the traffic is light on these country roads, and you won't find a single traffic light all round about on the island. Although it's best to keep the tank topped up, there's only two petrol stations. As soon as you drive out of the airport, a road sign welcomes you with the Hawaiian greeting Aloha and the slogan Slow Down. This is Molokai. This remote island has suffered some problems of late. The resort closed during the economic crash, leaving just one single hotel.
We cut out a third of our accommodations about 8 years ago when the ranch shut down. There are beach cottages. There are condominiums. There are private homes to rent. That means you're not getting room service. So again, not for every traveler, but for those who don't need to be pampered, let's say, those are the people that would appreciate the available accommodations.
When I arrived in Molokai's tiny capital of Kaunakakai, it appeared unimpressive. This small settlement of just 3,000 is basically two streets of functional, boxy, prefabricated low-rise retail units. You can't build higher than the coconut trees. You won't find a Starbucks or a McDonald's, and the two supermarkets are basically larger versions of British corner shops. But behind the town's rather bland exterior, you'll find amazing, unique shops like Terry's Bookstore. Her shelves are stacked with local craft items, and there's a heavy emphasis on books about healing and spirituality. You'll soon realise that Molokai's visitors are looking for something beyond 7 days in the sunshine.
People have two reactions when they come to Molokai. And one is they look around, they go, oh, this is it? And the other, they come and they go, oh, this is it.
Many visitors spend their time on the waters around Molokai, and there's a 40-kilometre reef fringing the island. It's the longest in the States. Claire Moai is a champion windsurfer. She moved from England 23 years ago.
It's quite the spiritual kind of island. A lot of times when I go out in the ocean and I'm out there and I'm going, oh my gosh, this is incredible. You don't see zillions of houses up on the hill. You don't see lots of traffic out on the water. It's just you and some turtles and, you know, and sea life.
Claire's company, Molokai Outdoors, offers activities which make the most of this special environment.
We have the best kayaking and stand-up. So we just started doing our kayaking with a little bit of mangrove cleanup. The mangrove's actually invasive. I call it now mangrove addiction. I kind of started off with the visitors going, hey, you let's just pick some seeds and let's cut some mangrove. After about 10 minutes, okay, five more minutes. Okay, just a few more. And that's become kind of an addiction. People are cleaning, but it's actually a positive thing. And then we paddle downwind and we have the wind behind us and we're out in the ocean with nothing. No engine, no smelly engine, just kind of seeing Molokai from a different view. So that's one thing. Then we got snorkeling, diving. What we think is a lot is like 6 to 8 people on Maui and Oahu, that's hardly anything. They consider that slow. We keep all our stuff small and purposely do that because we don't want to be big, because it changes the essence of what Molokai is all about.
After all that activity, you might have developed a thirst and hunger. Molokai's few commercial attractions include a 500-acre coffee plantation where they make a decent cup. There's also a macadamia farm.
All right, so here we are with some fresh lychee. Lychee is a fruit that most people know from like a Chinese restaurant, and it's in the dessert. But usually they get it canned, so oftentimes people don't appreciate it.
You might find locals munching on lychees from the Pu Ohuko Ranch. It's on the east side of the island.
A British person would think they look like horse chestnuts or conkers. Quite hard outside, but you're peeling it off, and that looks then like a pickled onion.
I think it would resemble that, but I think you need to taste this.
I hope it doesn't taste like a pickled onion.
Oh, it won't, I promise you. Isn't it heaven?
It's really sweet and quite strong taste, actually, but nice.
You might be surprised to learn that the food's really good at the airport buffet, too. I realised Molokai cuisine's quite different to standard US fare when I spoke to Nohi Peli Kai.
Now, you've got a roll here. It's teri spam and egg musubi. It looks a bit like sushi.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's teriyaki spam?
Yeah. Yes, teriyaki spam.
Soak it in there.
We make our
sauce.
Own sauce.
The staff soak the spam in a secret sauce of sugar, garlic and ginger.
You love spam then?
Yes.
Yep, it's the Hawaiian steak.
As you drive around Molokai, you'll pass small cafes advertising plates.
And it's actually a mixture of cultures. One or maybe two scoops of steamed rice. Of course, that's the Japanese and the Asians who came here. A scoop of macaroni salad. And that is a nod to the Europeans and the Americans that were here. And then it's often teriyaki, chicken or beef or pork or chicken katsu, and lomi lomi salmon.
Traditionally, fish were trapped in these stone ponds. At the side of the main coastal road, you'll clearly see stone walls which look like old building foundations stretching away from the coastline.
So they made these huge enclosures. Some of them are acres. At one time, we had over 60 fish ponds along the south shore. And these date back to ancient times, where the Hawaiians understood that the freshwater springs that come up under the reef creates brackish water. It grows a certain type of algae that attracts the baby fish. And they built gates that the baby fish could swim in. They eat the algae, they get too fat, and they can't leave. So that was our first aquaculture.
I find Molokai to be a friendly, happy place, but for generations, its name was associated with one of the saddest episodes in Hawaiian history. Back in the 1830s, islanders started contracting leprosy, now known as Hansen's disease. The king ordered that sufferers should be permanently banished to a 4-square-mile corner, cut off from the rest of Molokai by massive mountains. I boarded another plane for the short flight to visit Kalupapa Village, the lepers' colony. Even though it's on Molokai, you can't drive there because of the cliffs. The journey offers stunning views of those towering sea cliffs. You can, though, choose to trek down the 1,700-foot cliff face in a mule train. The 3-mile journey involves 26 switchbacks, and with my dislike of heights, I chose the aircraft. On arrival at the airport, a sign demanded we wait for collection by our guide. This remote community is still home to a handful of sufferers, and visitors must be chaperoned to protect their privacy.
To enter the settlement of Kalupapa, you have to have a permit. The only way to get a permit is to be sponsored by a resident. So what we're on right now is an operation that was started by one of the patients in 1966. So everybody that comes on Damien Tours is technically sponsored by a patient.
My name is Pat. We don't officially start the tour until we get the people that come down the trail, so I'm expecting 10 mule riders.
Tour guide Patrick Boland led our small party to a yellow American school bus in which we'd be driven around this tiny town. We looked at its neat cottages, manicured gardens and white-towered church, and opposite, a small pub. Just down the road is a small concrete wharf. This dock would have brought in both provisions and more patients.
The law said that anybody that had leprosy would be isolated and separated from the rest of society. This place is the place they chose for that isolation and separation.
They could have gone anywhere after the rules changed in 1969.
Most of them have been here for decades, and this had become home. Anybody who was a patient here in 1969 can stay as long as they want. So consequently, we have those 9 remaining patients, the youngest of which is 74. When there's no remaining patients, so it'll be a national park.
Over the years, 8,000 people were sent here, and Patrick described how the facilities, food and medical provision was woefully inadequate at times. Patrick told me a very powerful story about a woman called Olivia who discovered she was going to be banished to this remote corner of Molokai.
Well, Olivia was 18 years old, engaged to be married. She was at the hospital for another condition. They discovered she had leprosy. They let her go home, but the Board of Health agent came to her door, asked for her. She says, "That's me."
Olivia went into her bathroom intent on suicide. She wanted to drink a bottle of cleaning fluid, but was so distressed she couldn't find it. She lived in this isolated community until her 90th birthday.
This is her home. It is a closed community. How do they feel about people coming in and looking around?
They really don't mind. I think they appreciate having the story told.
A bus slowly continued along the single track road under palm trees to a small wooden church, St. Philomena's. A Belgian priest, Father Damien, built it. He devoted his life to helping the residents, literally. He succumbed to the disease himself in 1889 and has since been venerated as a saint. It was a humbling experience, and particularly poignant, that such a place of peace that you might view as paradise had seen so much human suffering.
Knew many of the patients. I knew Richard, who started the business. Kind of a privilege to be able to carry on in his footsteps and what he was trying to do.
Your Molokai report continues next with a trip to the Rock, which can help visitors start a family. And we'll pop to the post office to discover what unusual souvenirs they'll send the folks at home.
Want to pay less for your railway journeys? Trainsplit finds cheaper fares that other sites might not offer you. See how many pounds you'll save on your next trip. Go to greatdestinationsradioshow.com and click on cheaper train tickets at the top of the page. That's cheaper train tickets on greatdestinationsradioshow.com.
This is the Great Destinations Radio Show. I'm on the Hawaiian island of Molokai, where visitors enjoy sunset, scenery, rambling and rainbows, rather than resorts and fancy restaurants.
You got the Kalaupapa look also when you tour over here, you make sure you stop up there.
So, I drove to that lookout, a clifftop approximately 1,600 feet above that small community that leprosy patients were banished to.
Overlooking a peninsula that was originally known as Makanalua, that for over 1,000 years has played a significant role, not only on this island, but because we are the pico or the center of all the islands.
So steep.
It's the world's highest sea cliffs.
Hmm.
Not like visually, but there's a lot underneath the water that you don't see. It's a good hike.
Have you done it?
That's usually what I do, I hike.
How long does it take you?
Hour or a little bit after.
Molokai locals want to keep the island off the mass tourism circuit. As I drove around, I noticed homemade signs fixed above trees and fences proclaiming no cruise ships.
Anybody you talk to, we're real proud we're not for everybody. If you want to dance on the tables, go back to Maui, that's okay with us. But if you want to understand what makes this place special, and you can slow down enough, it's not for everybody, and that's why not everybody comes.
There are no cheesy cultural shows here. When I walked into the bookstore, former honorary mayor James Mawai was playing for regulars.
That's a Molokai song. About 800 of years.
Every Friday at 4 in the afternoon, a group of community elders, or kapuna, meet under the shade on Hotel Molokai's outdoor deck. Some of the group are there to socialise, the others play songs they grew up with. It is a must-attend event.
Hey.
After the music, I headed to a must-see site, the Phallic Rock. I drove to the middle of the island and took the short, easy walk through the tall ironwood tree forest. It seems a few other tourists had similar ideas.
Hello. Hello. Is this the right way to the Phallic Rock?
Oh, yes. Keep going. Keep looking. Yes, keep going.
Is it worth a walk?
Oh, sure. Why not?
It's not that far.
You'll say, is it or isn't it?
I reached the 10-foot-high angled Phallic Rock. It was circled by leaves and flower garlands laid on the ground. According to legend, if you're a woman who wants to have a baby, you offer the rock a gift and spend the night sleeping by it. Its presence acts as a fertility treatment. Molokai is a place for people who can make their own entertainment, and hiking does form part of that.
Go explore on your own. We got hiking on the West End beaches. The freebie stuff, you could paint coconuts. You could sit and do absolutely nothing, which is great. You won't find the commercial stuff over here.
There's a special part of Molokai in the island's remote east that I wanted to know more about.
Halava Valley, the oldest continuous civilization anywhere in Hawaii'i. And when you look up that valley and reflect on 1,500 years of history here, it's a pretty remarkable experience.
From the airport, the valley's a slow 90-minute drive on narrow roads, passing through fast-flowing fords along clifftops, and then the road snakes around bends in the thick forest. I saw a sign warning me of a nene crossing, a type of goose found exclusively in Hawaii. Lawrence Kamami Akai's family are amongst the 12 inhabitants of this isolated corner of the island.
It is considered to be the oldest settlement on the island of Molokai, of the first Polynesians that came here. Archaeologically, through carbon data, there has been no other area in Hawaii that outdates Halava, which is 650 AD.
You can hike through the valley to waterfalls, which takes 3 hours there and back. But you will need a guide because you'll be traveling through private property and sacred land.
So this is why, like my uncle and that of my cousin, who started this cultural hike to the falls, is to educate people, yeah, as to what is there. A lot of people walk up there in the past and they don't know what they're looking at.
The area is filled with stone walls marking the plots of Hawaiian temples.
It has all of these heiaus, which is the temples. 18 of these Luakini heiaus on the island of Molokai. 12 of them is in that valley of Halava.
Island traditions have survived in this secluded valley.
You know, today I find a lot of people are doing what we call the honi, and the honi is that of the traditional method of breeding. You never saw that, you know, in the 50s, in the 60s, in the 70s and 80s, but only one place, and that was in Halava Valley. My uncle did that with everybody, and everybody was kind of uncomfortable about that, and that's the touching of the forehead to forehead, nostril to nostril. As you inhale, the importance of that is sharing the ha, the breath of life. That's how we greet it. That knowledge today is being spread out, but really the only place I knew of that preserved it was here.
Well, I drove to the middle of the island to a small hilltop settlement, Mauna Loa. This former plantation town's fallen on hard times. When the hotel closed, hard-to-replace jobs were lost. Many shops were boarded up when I visited, but its colourful highlight is a kite shop. Its bright designs outside encourage you to enter the store, and you can choose a factory tour. Molokai's west coast was also tinged with sadness. The closed resort stood on a hilltop, and developers had clearly hoped it would encourage property purchases nearby. I drove through acres of desert-like scrub, intersected by a gridiron of overgrown streets, complete with streetlights, but very few buildings and not a soul in sight. All the properties that were built appear to be for sale. On paper, you'd be buying a piece of paradise. A few hundred yards away, Papuhaku is one of Hawaii's largest white sand beaches, over 3 miles long. I headed to Kapukahihu Beach at its southern end. I found a beautiful, small, half-moon-shaped cove of around 400 metres width. Rocky outcrops surrounded its butter-yellow sands. I sat on a giant volcanic rock that was filled with holes like a piece of black Swiss cheese. Behind me was a large sandbank separating the beach area from the blood-red dusty soil that led to the car park. The vibrant colours were incredible, and it was so quiet. I was sharing the whole beach with two parents watching their two kids paddling on floats and paddleboards in the cove. I couldn't help think this is the paradise that people travel to Hawaii to see. Just outside the town, you'll pass Coconut Grove, a thin strip containing hundreds of tall coconut palms. A former Hawaiian king planted them. A few miles on, you'll meet Gary Lamb, the postmaster of the Hulahua Post Office.
Out in the middle of nowhere, that very few people would go to if it wasn't for the coconuts. And I see people from all over the world here.
The staff there will give you a free coconut, which you can then decorate, and then the U.S. Postal Service will mail it anywhere in the world.
We give away the coconuts, they are free of charge. People just pay for the postage to mail it. Mailing to the UK would normally cost between $20 and $30. I tell people to decorate two of the three sides of the coconut. Leave one side for me so I can put colorful postage stamps on it.
That's a lot of stamps.
Yes, this is that's probably 20 stamps right there. And I save all the colorful ones for this purpose. We have marking pens here, a few paints.
They sent close to 4,000 last year. Gary's predecessor noticed there was an excess of coconuts in Molokai, and many ended up going to landfill.
Somebody sent one to her mother for her 105th birthday, so that was pretty interesting. Gotten word back from some of the people who deliver these that it's the most interesting thing they've ever delivered.
As I prepared to leave the island, I called into Terry's shop and asked her, if you've got just 24 hours in Molokai, what should you do?
I'm not going to do it in 24 hours. If you come to Molokai, I think the most important thing is to meet the people, to spend some time exchanging what we call the breath of life, ha, to share our spirit with each other.
Reaching Molokai is not straightforward, and it's best to break your journey in the United States. First, fly from London to LA or San Francisco. That takes about 11 hours. Then take a second plane for the 6-hour trip to Honolulu. The final flight within the islands takes less than 30 minutes.
The Great Destinations Radio Show.